FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome, and you are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. It's March 20th, 2018. Well, imagine bicycling on six continents, visiting over 100 countries, and swimming in all of the world's oceans. That sounds like an amazing journey. And you're going to hear from the person who made that journey. Hey, first, as always, participate in the show, be part of it, email us. The address is kl@kerrylutz.com. So right now you're going to hear from Frosty Wooldridge. Frosty, hey, you're a major bicycler. I don't think I would try to bike with you because I am slow and steady, but you must be in amazing physical condition, and welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much, Kerry, and I'm really excited to talk with all listeners across the United States and across the globe in your listening area, because the key for me as a world bicyclist is to educate, because I'm a former math and science teacher, but also to give solutions and also inspire or encourage everyone listening today to become a part of the solution rather than have your kids become the victims of non-solution. So I'm really excited to talk with you today.
Hey, and before we get into overpopulation, especially here in the United States, predicting that by 2050 we'll have 438 million people, the top six metropolitan areas will double in size. Before we get into that, you sound like an interesting person. What drove you to become a world traveler via two wheels, via bicycle?
Well, as a matter of fact, when I started teaching back in 1971, the average wage, and my wage, was $5,000 a year as a math science teacher in Brighton, Colorado. And I was so poor that I had nothing I had no money to buy a new car. I couldn't buy a house. I lived in a little 300 square foot apartment with another fellow. And I taught and taught and taught. And then one of the guys was a teacher with me. He was a bicycle touring nut. And so he said, why don't you ride across America with me? So in 1975, I bicycled across America coast to coast. Since that time, I just loved bicycling. I loved the physical, the mental, the spiritual aspect of it. And then all of a sudden, I started writing stories for magazines and adventure stories, because on a bicycle, you run into all sorts of adventure. And then I expanded it to all six continents, one more to go. And I've scuba dived in all the oceans of the world on those journeys. And I got to see the planet. I got to see the people. I got to see the cultures. And in my late 20s, I got into China, and I got into India, and I got into Bangladesh. And I was overwhelmed with the amount of people and the just stacked people everywhere. And the pollution of the Yangtze River and the Ganges, which I floated on, are just nothing but big sewer pipes. And they're just feeding into the oceans, and they have 20,000 square mile dead zones where no vertebrate marine life can even live. And then that happened with all the oceans coming out of Lima, Peru, you name it. And at that point, my worldview changed. I was just a happy-go-lucky kid teaching school, the whole nine yards. And then I just went, oh my gosh, humanity has got a problem. And since that time, I've written several books, America on the Brink, the next added 100 million Americans. Another one is Immigration's Unarmed Invasion, Deadly Consequences. And I also am now going to publish in this year. It's called America's Overpopulation Predicament, Blindsiding Future Generations. And the key here is that my heroes are John Muir and Susan B. Anthony and Abigail Adams and, Thomas Jefferson and Ben Franklin and all, Martin Luther King. They did something in their time to help change the course of history toward a positive one for future generations. And it's my intent to educate enough Americans by the millions, whether I do it with my books or my columns that I write each week, is to help us learn about the overpopulation crisis facing America and the immigration that's driving it, and then takes, make solutions and create changes in the Constitution and in our laws so that we don't go down that road, so we don't end up like China or India or Bangladesh or Mexico or any other third world country that's simply overpopulating and then feeding all first world countries with their consequences.
Okay, and it is a valid concern. And before we get to the problems and the solutions, of all the places you've been to, the over 100 countries on every continent, what was the most interesting place you ever went to?
I have to say that's quite a question. I've gone into places that are you only see on the Nature Channel. Certainly, places like Australia are just exquisite with scuba diving and with the desert and the outback and the frilled lizards and the kangaroos and the wombats and the camels and the emus and all that go with that. But I've also been into the Amazon, and the Amazon is exquisite with all the bird life and getting to see the pink dolphins there on the Ucayali River off the Amazon River itself, Machu Picchu and the Inca Trail, which I've packed. The Galapagos Islands, I think, probably were the most fantastic 14 days of my life, seeing what Charles Darwin saw and going to the 8 different islands and seeing the blue-footed boobies and the blue-footed booby dance and the tortugas and the waved albatross. My scuba diving trips have been extraordinary on the reefs, like the Great Barrier Reef, and certainly on the Caribbean and off the coast of the Galapagos Islands. So it's been a great journey. And then when you think about the Arctic, then I've stood on the South Pole in Antarctica and frozen my tail feathers off. I actually bicycled and camped out in Antarctica. And so the world itself is exquisite. But here in the United States, I've bicycled across America coast to coast. In fact, last summer, Astoria, Oregon to Bar Harbor, Maine, 4,500 miles. And I got to follow the Lewis and Clark Trail for 1,500 miles all the way to Bismarck, North Dakota on the Missouri River. So it's hard to say that one place is more incredible than the other, because the whole planet itself and all the people on the planet and all the animals on the planet make up just an exquisite mosaic that I have been able to see at 12 miles per hour. And so we are blessed with this extraordinary planet and this extraordinary life on this planet. And I'm hoping that we have enough gumption and enough intelligence and make enough choices here in the early part of the 21st century so that we can hand a viable, flourishing planet over to our children. And that, for me, is the biggest key.
Hey, and it's so important. The future, you always want to leave a better world for your kids than the way you found it. But we're not doing it now, are we?
We certainly aren't. Again, for those of you who don't realize the overpopulation crisis, everybody thinks it's out there, that the third world is adding 80 million new babies net gain every year, a billion every 12 years. And of course, we're going to jump from 7.6 billion to well over 10 billion by 2050, which is 3 decades from now. And obviously, that's a blink in time. And here in the United States, we're going to jump from 300 million that we reached in 2006, in October of 2006. We're going to hit well over 438 million in the United States by 2050, which is only 32 years from now. And the consequences of adding that many people in real terms means we will be doubling the populations of our 35 most populated cities. In other words, New York City will jump from 8.3 million to 16.6, Chicago 4 million to 8 million, Los Angeles from 11 million to 22 million. The state of Florida is on course right now to jump from 18 million to 36 million within 30 years. Texas will add 10 million. My state of Colorado will add 5 million. California, which has 38 million people, is on slate right now to jump 20 million people. And it adds 1,655 people every single day of the year. And 98% of them are legal and illegal immigrants, because these people are coming from countries that have failed, have been overpopulated, overrun, and simply unsustainable. And that's why they're flooding into America and Canada and Europe right now. And so we're facing that kind of a consequence. And my goal is to show Americans that we can help them in their own countries rather than import them into our country and then turn our country into the same consequences that they fled.
So, okay, so you've outlined the problem pretty well. And it's staggering. We think we have problems now with the welfare state. Can you imagine with that many more people who and automation and everything else? What are the solutions here, Frosty?
Well, the key is this. First of all, you're correct on that, Kerry, and that is that the automation is now making jobs, redundant jobs, especially like work, working on the line at an auto company or working in a canning factory. All of this stuff is getting completely automated, even picking cherries and picking oranges and picking celery. It is all being automated, but all of these people that are coming to America, and they're coming in at 100,000 per month. Every 30 days, we import 100,000 people, and virtually most of them they lack education, they lack skills, and they certainly lack any kind of affinity to a first world country like this, because they simply, unfortunately, are going on welfare. We have, at this point, I think it's around 48 million Americans are living or subsisting on food stamps. And so that is not viable. Then you have, I think, the latest statistics on unemployment, somewhere around 5 million. But when you keep importing another 100,000, the third world people face from Congo or from Ethiopia or from Sudan or from Morocco, they lack skills and education to function in a first world country. So then they go on welfare. And we're now right now paying out about $296 billion a year in welfare payments, food stamps and in housing, Section 8 housing and medical care and all that for all of these people that are coming over here. And then this is an oxymoron to do that, because if you've seen the latest statistics on Los Angeles, there's 60,000. I just saw the figures last night on a video by a video team that went down there on Skid Row in Los Angeles. There's 60,000 Americans who are living in tarp tents and or nylon tents in the streets of Los Angeles, and another 20,000 are living in the tents and living in hovels and the cardboard there in San Francisco. And I just did a story that I'm working on right now. For all those of you who appreciate this, in Chicago, there are 48,000 homeless children in Chicago and 64,000 homeless adults. And that was in the ChicagoTribune.com. So as you can imagine, we need to start taking care of our own American citizens first. And that's black, white, brown, red, and yellow. This is not about race, creed, or color. This has to do with numbers. And I'm a math science teacher. And again, exponential growth, which means the growth of a cancer cell, it's the same thing, will continue to grow if you let it, and it will finally kill the host. So if we as a people and as a culture and as a civilization allow mass immigration to continue, since it has and added 100 million people since 1965, we're going to become victims of it. And so the solutions are very simple. We need to help all of these people in their own countries so that they can help themselves in their own countries, and then help them with birth control, help them with food, help them with water, help them with cultivation of foods, and then give them a chance to encourage their own educational systems to prosper. And so the simplest thing to do is to stop all immigration into the United States, other than minor numbers for marriages and so forth. But stopping all immigration in the United States, because in the end, if you look at the numbers, it's simply unsustainable. And that is one very big and probably the best solution. Others can think of other different solutions that go with that. But helping them in their own countries and in stopping all immigration into our country and certainly Canada and Europe, so that we can still be successful societies and help them in their own societies. Because if we keep going on the path we're going right now, we're going over a demographic cliff. We've got water shortages in 7 states right now. We are running out of energy sources, of course, and then resources. The resource shortages that are coming to this country are really critical. Whether you have so many people that need a battery, they need zinc and they need lead and they need cadmium and they need all that goes with that. Well, when you use up all those finite resources, at some point, there's no way you can propel a civil civilization like this that's so highly consumptive. And so that's a start. And again, that means to rescind the 1965 Immigration Reform Act and change it and change it to a viable situation so that America is brought up first, so that American citizens of every color and every creed and every ethnic group are able to function and become educated and become prosperous in jobs. Because at the rate we're going right now, every immigrant that comes into this country takes a job away from an American, displaces an American, and absolutely spends us into greater welfare consequences to the tune right now over $20 trillion in debt as a civilization. Obviously, we can't keep doing this because at some point that financial house of cards will fall. And so to stop that or to change that, that is some of the solutions that I am proposing in my newest book coming out.
What about Frosty population control? Obviously, that has to be a part of this equation. We can't just keep adding more people, can we?
No, we can't. And let me make this really clear. The American female since 1970, and birth control obviously came out there in the 60s and took hold in the 70s. The average woman in America, and that's black, white, brown, red, and yellow, has averaged 2.03 children per woman. So we are not doing this to ourselves. Same with Canada, only 1.9 fertility rate. Europe, anywhere from 1.6 to 1.9 fertility rate. So it's Western countries and the women of Western countries who chose responsible birth rates of two children or less since 1970, when the rest of the world, unfortunately, kept adding 80 million net gain every year. And of course, when I was in college in Earth Day 1970, the world population was 3.5 billion. Unfortunately, nobody else listened to Earth Day back then except Western countries, and the world population skyrocketed to 7.6 billion as it is today. And again, adding a billion every 12 years, and we will be hitting well over 10 billion by 2050. So there's no end to the line of immigrants, whether they're legal or illegal. They're all starving. They're all out of water. They're all out of energy. They're all out of hope. And so they're migrating. In fact, the United Nations said there could be something in excess of 60 million, minimum 60 million and as high as 100 million desperate immigrants here in the next 20 years that want to find another place to land. And so I'm a teacher. You got to plan for your class. You got to write lesson plans. You've got to know what's coming, and you got to know how to handle it. So the way to handle this is to help them in their own countries, and then they have to be responsible for their birth rates. They have to take responsibility and accountability for living within the carrying capacity of their countries. That means within the water capacity, within the arable land so they can grow food, within the energy capacity of their country, and finally the resources of their country, because it is a Faustian bargain, if you will, if you just keep allowing immigration into the United States or Canada and think it's all going to work out. Well, it's not going to work out because the numbers absolutely dictate that it cannot be sustained. Those numbers cannot be sustained.
Unsustainable. And so far, we've been trying to help the world control its population now for 60 odd years. We haven't been successful with it, have we?
No, and the reason for that is because of religions that are based a couple thousand years ago, go forth and multiply, because of cultures that have and will not tolerate birth control. And so you have that kind of ethos, you have that kind of culture, you have that kind of religious impact, and then you also have illiteracy. And that's one of the great tragedies of the third world that I learned in my travels. And you can imagine as a college kid, and I had a great college career, and I went into the Army, and I served my country, and then I went into teaching. I'm just having a great time traveling on a bicycle around the world, and all of a sudden I slam up against Bangladesh. Bangladesh has 161 million people in a landmass less than the size of Iowa. And the tragedy of Bangladesh is, you know, misery and suffering and human misery on an index level of human suffering that hardly anybody can understand. I mean, over 4 million kids die every year in this world, and 8 million adults, according to the United Nations, because they starve to death. It's already happening. Can you imagine what it's going to be like with another 3 billion people added to the planet and the limited arable land to grow crops and certainly a limited fresh water to even irrigate the crops? So this is essentially, Kerry, a perfect storm gathering over humanity. And but my ultimate intention is to create a national, international discussion on population and where the United States is headed and where it wants to go and what it wants to bequeath to its own children. And then we create an international discussion, and that includes all of the heads of state, all of the top environmentalists, and certainly all of the religious leaders, because religions have to come to enlightenment in order to guide their followers toward a viable future and a productive future and a flourishing future. And that has to do with the big thing called education. And as I really bring this picture to all your listeners, can you imagine 80 million new babies net gain every year, year after year after year, all the way to 2050 and beyond, of course? And how do you educate 80 million new kids every year? You don't even have teachers. You don't have classrooms. You don't have any ability to educate them. So then what do? Well, they simply are illiterate, and they continue this mass proliferation and birth rates. And so there's nothing solved. So the only way to solve it is for first world countries to stop allowing migration into those countries. And that would force these other countries to finally come to terms with their birth rates, come to terms with their carrying capacity, and come to terms with just plain biology and just plain numbers and sustainability. Do I make sense, Kerry?
Oh, it makes a lot of sense. And if you're a pessimist, it's totally understandable why you would be. Because, look, in the U.S. alone, like we were talking about before the call, you have the Democrats that want more voters, so they're undocumented Democrats, and you have the Republicans who want cheap labor. And this acts to really undermine the long-term interests of the United States, and for that matter, the world. Because, look, if the U.S. doesn't act to solve the problem, nobody else is going to do it, are they?
Well, they're certainly not going to. And I'm going to bring in another aspect of what we're facing as a country, as a culture, as an ethos, and as a language. The United States was built on the English language. It was built on assimilation by immigrants. It was built on a common American way. Well, that's now being destroyed, because you're now seeing groups like Black Lives Matter that completely disregard the American way of life, the Muslim Brotherhood, which is trying to install Sharia law. You're also see La Raza, which is the Mexican contingent trying to regain the four states on the border. But here's another one that most people don't think about. And I've seen it in my world travels on a bicycle at 12 miles an hour. Can you imagine what the United States is going to look like in the next 30 years when you bring in 100 million immigrants and their children from 196 different countries around the world? That means we get 196 different worldviews. That's 196 different cultures coming into our country, 196 different languages. And I have to ask anyone listening, do you think with all the fracturing going on in this country today, with all of the angry people on so many different levels, the racial conflict in so many cities, whether it's Chicago, whether it's L.A., whether it's in Denver, Colorado, what do you think is going to happen with 100 million people with all of these different races and colors and creeds and religions? And you think that they're all going to, just assimilate into the United States of America? Do you think they're going to become a part of America? No, the reality is they're going to pull in their own directions. They're going to pull for their ethos. They're going to pull for their country. They're going to, as a matter of fact, I'll give you a quote here. It's very, very important. It's very quick. This is by James Walsh. He is the former Associate General Counsel of the United States Immigration and Naturalization Service, now known as ICE. He said, and I quote, immigrants devoted to their own cultures and religions are not influenced by the secular, politically correct facade that dominates academia, news media, entertainment, education, religious, and political thinking today, he said. These immigrants claim the right not to assimilate, and the day is coming when the question will be, how can the United States regulate the defiantly unassimilated cultures, religions, and mores of foreign lands? Such immigrants say their traditions trump the U.S. legal system. Balkanization of the United States has begun, unquote. Now, just last fall, I drove through Minneapolis, Minnesota. It has 120,000 Somali immigrants. Virtually all of them are on welfare. They have their EBT cards. They have all the Section 8 housing. Mm-hmm. And they absolutely do pretty much of nothing because they have no skills whatsoever. And you see no American flags flown there. You get to Detroit, Michigan, and Dearborn. I used to work in Dearborn, Michigan. I'm a Michigan State University grad. And Dearborn, Michigan has now become a little Baghdad. Ford Road, Telegraph, Joy Road, all of those places at one time were totally American, all American, are now all Arabic, and mosques are everywhere. The call of the five calls a day to bow and to Mecca, that is what Dearborn. You go down to Miami, Florida right now. Miami, Florida is no longer an American city. Spanish is spoken down there predominantly, and all of the Americans have literally fled Miami. And to get out of there because they're just not welcome. And so that's what you are seeing right now. Same thing in Los Angeles. I mean, schools are taught in Spanish. You have all of the barrios. You see everything is being taken over by these immigrants, and they're now mandating their own cultures and their own. As a matter of fact, here in Denver, Colorado, we've had as high as a 67% dropout flunkout rate in Denver public schools. And of course, I've been a teacher here. Well, sure. How many languages in Denver public schools? 173 languages.
Oh my God.
Is that cohesive for the United States? Is that going to help us maintain a viable and cohesive civilization? And of course, one of the great crises that I think it was one of the great philosophers said, there's two great dividers are language and religion. And we, of course, are really racing and accelerating pell-mell toward a highly divisive, multilinguistic and multicultural society. Does that make sense? Am I hitting it on the head?
Yeah, I think more importantly, you know, there's all these people within the country, within the U.S., who basically, and we're not talking about immigrants, who don't see the value of the country, believe that we've, you know, exploited the third world for resources and whatever, and they just don't see Western civilization as worth saving. And that's a real concern.
Well, it certainly is. And here's the key. And I've traveled all over the world, and I've seen all the misery of the third world. It's not working. And whether you say that the United States has raped all these other worlds for the resources, well, that's been going on since the dawn of time. The ones that are really taking advantage of all these countries now are places like India and China, which is buying up U.S. land like crazy, U.S. businesses like crazy. And certainly China is buying up land in South America and also in Asia in Africa to feed their 1.35 billion people, which is soon going to be 1.5 billion. I wrote a piece recently. It's called The Deadliest Birth Rate for All Humanity. It's a 5-part series. And Africa right now at 1.1 billion people and its current birth rates will hit 2 billion by mid-century and 4 billion before the end of the century. You can look that up on the United Nations population projections for Africa. And so they're going to be eating up resources like crazy. Again, exponential growth is the same modus operandi of a cancer cell. And Africa is literally having a human cancer cell with exponential growth growth that's going to eat up Africa. But India is on the same path. They're at 1.25 billion people in India right now, and they just refuse to take responsibility for their birth rates. And they're going to add about 16 to 18 million net gain every year, and they're going to hit around 1.55 billion by mid-century. And even China, with its one child per family, still adds through population momentum 8 million plus each year. So they're going to hit 1.5 billion. So as you can see, everybody is essentially grabbing resources from everywhere around the planet. And the United States has been successful because it has the ingenuity and the energy and the working ethic of all the people in America to create resources. I mean, not resources, but create products and create a standard of living that we enjoy. But there's no way we can continue that standard of living by adding another 140 million people.
Yeah, for sure not. Well, hey, Frosty, it's been great having you on. Tell us where we find you and how we can become aware of this and what we can do about it.
Well, thank you, Kerry. Yes, I would ask everybody to join numbersusa.org. That's numbersusa.org. And we're 9 million Americans of all walks of life. You can write in the pre-written fax letters. It's all for free. You can literally send out the, it's called Immigration Gumballs in Poverty. It's a 5-minute video that shows you with these gumballs by Roy Beck, how the world is growing by 80 million new babies net gain every year, and that no amount of immigration will save them, but it will definitely destroy our civilization. And then you can go to my website, howtoliveafelifeofadventure.com. Also, I'm on Facebook with Frosty Wooldridge. I write for newswithviews.com and Capitol Hill Outsider and Freedom's Phoenix and opednews.com. And my goal is I write for liberal papers. I write for libertarian news service websites. I write for independents. I write for conservatives like newswithviews.com because I want to educate all Americans of every walk of life that we are not going to be able to sustain or survive another 100 million immigrants into this country on our way to adding, jumping from 300 million to well over 625 million. I've seen the results of it. And if you have any questions or you want me to send you those videos, my personal email, frostyw@juno.com. frostyw@juno.com. I'll send you those two videos, and you can also join CAPS Web, CAPSWEB, CAPSWEB.org, and CarryingCapacityNetwork.com. CarryingCapacityNetwork.com. The key is to empower yourself by joining these organizations, which will collectively empower you to make a statement to your two senators and your House rep so that we can, again, rescind the 1965 Immigration Reform Act and literally stop all immigration into the United States or pretty much close to it so that your kids have a future here in the United States of America and that our society can flourish and thrive here in the 21st century instead of go over a cliff. And that's where we're headed right now.
Hey, couldn't agree with you more. You make some great points there, Frosty, and we're really on board with you. We'll have a link to your main site in the show notes to this interview on financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Again, participate in the show. Feel free. We welcome your emails. The email address is kl@carrylutz.com, Twitter feed @CarryLutz, Facebook page Financial Survival Network. Frosty, good luck in your battle. We're with you all the way.
Thank you very much, Kerry. It's a pleasure and all the best.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.